Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. It's the always popular, going to need a bigger boat edition of Sabres Live today. Based on our team of the day, as I lose my voice
kids,
right off the hop.
Do you think kids realize what that line is from and what that movie that's from? We're going to need a bigger boat?
I don't know. I have no voice. Please.
No, sorry. You take a sip of water as I keep going. But, you know, it's like what, pop culture, or maybe you go to one of those trivia question like nights or whatever, and it's a what movie is the famous line we're gonna need a bigger boat from? And I would think that a lot of people may think it's Titanic, because a bigger boat may not have gone down. But no, it's not from Titanic. Obviously, it's from Jaws.
Oh, I was gonna guess Lethal Weapon 2.
Lethal Weapon 2 could have been also a Mel Gibson and
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover line, because they had a lot of lines. But no, for all the kids out there, Jaws is definitely the one.
50th anniversary?
And I know, producer right? Jeff with the quick 50th anniversary. It's back in theater this weekend. So if you want to go see Jaws on the silver screen, go out and check it out. Man, like, it was so state of the art, the shark, the special effect, the... And now you look at it now and you're like, that thing looks like it was made out of plastic. Like it just, which it was probably made out of plastic, but what a movie, what a scary, suspenseful type of thriller, but just great movie.
Well, the sharks have not been around nearly as long as the movie, but they are still, in my mind, a very compelling team to talk about, despite where they've been in the standings of late. Any NHL news or other news you would like to start with today? This is the unsolicited, unscripted part of the show.
So, you know, I was terrible in history in school, right? I had no idea. I used to learn about the, you know, the French invasion, the British invasion, and this, that. And I had the dates and it all. I was awful. I was good in almost everything, but history, I was terrible. And I love history now as an adult. And so today, for whatever reason, I go to X and it's, Quebec is trending. And I'm like, I don't like when something is trending. Usually that's because something bad has happened, or, you know, somebody's name, celebrity is trending, something. So I'm like, oh, what's going on to Quebec? And I click on it. And just to come out that on this day, 250 years ago, the American invasion of Quebec began, which was a failed attempt, right? They invaded Montreal, took over the city, but when they got to Quebec City in December of 1775, they lost the battle during a blizzard on New Year's Eve and retreated. And then Carleton, as I was telling you off the air before, not the mascot of the Ottawa Senators, Carleton the Bear.
Maple Leafs.
Oh, is it Maple Leafs?
Sparta yes. Cat is Ottawa, dude.
Sparta Cat is Ottawa. Sorry, Carleton the Bear is the Maple Leafs. You're right. But isn't Carleton University in Ottawa?
Carleton University is okay. In Ottawa. See,
that's
your history
why I got mixed
through.
Up. I got mixed up with
Carleton.
The two. But anyway, Carleton went over and brought in support, and they were able to defeat the American as they were trying to invade Canada, which was known at the time because it was basically just the province of Quebec.
Any NHL stuff you want to get off your chest now that you've led us down that path of how this continent evolved and maybe why things started the way they did? There was the original six, there was expansion in 67, 68, and then we've had dots of expansion along the way, including at the time, a surprising one, I think, for many, which was San Jose. And then all they did was go on to become a model franchise, quite frankly, until the most recent years. And we'll dive deeper into that coming up. But
NHL news around, I think that the biggest thing this morning that I saw come across the ticker is McDavid talking to the media, saying that he wants to win in Edmonton, that he knows that they can win in Edmonton, but he may not have an extension in place by the start of the season. That, you know, well, it probably may not be in place by the start of the season, and we'll see which. It's going to make a lot of people nervous in Edmonton, fans and staff and hockey operations knowing that they could go into the season and all of a sudden, let's just say the Oilers start the season 5-12.
They've done that already. They've changed coaches. It worked.
It did work. And even last year, they didn't start well. But that's going to add pressure on everybody to right that wrong, knowing that, ooh, McDavid could be a UFA at the end of the season. And that's going to add a ton of pressure. Do I think McDavid's going anywhere? No. But do I think he signs a long-term deal? Probably not. It's probably going to be like a 2 or 3 year deal just to say I'm staying. But if it doesn't work, then I could leave at some point.
I'm just letting it linger, just like Eichel, McDavid, any other big name contract potential extensions this offseason. Who goes first, McDavid or Eichel? Extends first.
Yeah,
extends
first. I know. Not who goes, who leaves first, but who extends first? I'm going to say Eichel. I think it's just been a perfect fit. Now, unless Vegas is still trying to recover and try to figure out their cap situation. And
they're fine. Everyone's cap situation is fine.
Because it keeps going up. Yeah, right. I mean, okay. But if you look at it right now, there's $7 million over the cap, you know, going into the season. Now, they're going to put Alex Pietrangelo on long-term IR. They're going to be about $1.5 million under the cap with that. But, yeah, they'll be fine. But they still have some work to do when you look at Eichel, potential UFA. Who else? Well, they got Jeremy Lozano or whatever. I think it's just Eichel. I think they get it done. That's why I said that.
Right. And just so I don't forget to do this, San Jose is our team of the day. We'll dive a lot deeper in all areas. They are a team that was dubbed number one in prospect pipeline by Corey Pronman of The Athletic, who we've been talking a lot about this week in his annual work, ranking these. What's that?
They should be. They've had like some of the top picks.
Everybody. It's an opinion, right? Like there's no scientific way to, you know, say that this is 100% true. But anyway, just quickly to your mentioning of Vegas and me tongue in cheek saying everybody's going to be fine in the new cap world until they, you know, of course, have to actually pay and, you know, you have to have your revenues in line with what you're paying out. But anyway, that aside, stumbled on something very interesting last night.
Okay.
So it pertains to the San Jose Sharks.
Okay.
Next year, they're going to have $62 million in cap space.
Yes.
$62 million. The following year,
they'll have $102 million.
The following year, they have $100 million in cap space.
I said that as a joke.
And currently, two members of the active roster signed. So we could spend the entire hour of Sabres Live today talking about the San Jose Sharks and their future outlook. And if they chose, they could have nobody on this team 2 years from now with $100 million to work with. And McDavid could go there. Eichel could go there. Panarin could go there. They could have three $20 million players and still have $40-plus million left over to sign the rest of the team, which they could do easily.
You got to know that. Macklin, Celebrini, would be signed, and Will Smith would be signed. Like those two would definitely be signed.
But what if they just say, "Bleep it," and move them for something else? Marty, we've never been able to sit here and say somebody has $100 million in cap space to work with in 2 years. Like, how outrageous is that? Based on where your career was, where the floor was, where the ceiling was when this all started.
So you could go and get 10 million dollar players and say we're going to get 10 million dollar players, and then you have two under contract as you mentioned, and okay, like Celebrini and Smith will sign you guys, so you have 14 players under contract. So you have 10 million dollar players, Celebrini and Smith, and two that are signed, and you just backfill it in with some million-dollar guys.
But in 2 years, most of these players, obviously, that are in the pipeline are still going to be on entry-level deals that are working their way in. And that's why I'm saying you can literally have a handful of 15 to $20 million players if you could
have those two players that have a contract past the 26-27 season, so 2 years, are Tyler Toffoli, which will be a $6 million contract, and William Eklund, who already signed his extension, his three-year extension, with one more year left to his entry-level deal. And I like Eklund. I think he's a great player. So you're going to have Eklund, Toffoli. You could have Celebrini and Smith sign, and still probably, you know, $90 million in cap space.
And by the way, the two guys you mentioned, Toffoli and Eklund, are projected top line players with Celebrini this season. And Toffoli was the only 30 goal scorer on the team last year. So,
yes.
Like, I don't know. It really
is this good for Mike Greer, or is it like by the time I get there?
It's amazing for Mike Greer.
Yeah, but is it good for him, or is it good for anybody looking for a GM job or thinking like that could be a change that they'll make in 2 years? Like, who knows if Mike Greer is going to survive the next 2 years?
Yes, he will.
You think he will?
100%, because he's on the right path.
Because that's the plan. That's basically telling ownership, like, look at where we're going and what flexibility we'll have.
I mean, I think so. I mean, now we're deep in it, so there's no sense getting out of it. Let's stay on the Sharks. But I mean, there's a lot of things to look at here. Now, like, Buffalo obviously has had a top prospect pipeline in recent years also.
Yeah.
So you can't, again, just anoint the Sharks as being
a
playoff team, you know, for a while here. But here's another thing that kind of struck me. And this stuff, like, comes to me naturally based on my love of statistics and history, but more importantly, age now, because, like, I've literally seen it happen, like, for the last 50 plus years of the NHL. And it hit me today that I feel like the Sharks, as a franchise, remind me very much of the Buffalo Sabres.
Okay.
And so the history lesson is, and I understand, you know, we all do, the frustration in the moment here of trying to get back to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But for the first 40 years in the Sabres' existence, they were the fourth best team in the NHL regular season. Okay. Only Philadelphia, pardon me, reverse order, start at the top. Montreal, Boston, Philadelphia were the only regular season teams that had more. So this is the model of consistency. Buffalo as a regular season team. A couple of trips to the finals, didn't make it, over the hump, and here they sit. So the San Jose Sharks have basically been the same thing. And so now Buffalo is in the longest drought in their franchise history of not making the playoffs. The San Jose Sharks are currently in that as well. They've missed for six straight years. But Marty, in their first, I mean, from 93 through the 18-19 season, they were a top 10 regular season team, bless you, off air. And
I muted in the right time. Thank you.
Deft use of the mute button. The Sharks had the third most playoff games from 93 through 2019. They made the playoffs in 19 of the previous 21 seasons before this current drought, and 21 of the previous 25. And we just talked about their appearance in the Stanley Cup final yesterday when they lost to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Players that they had over the years, right? You talk about Joel Thornton, that was a big one.
Marlowe.
Owen Nolan was big with the San Jose Sharks. Like, Evgeny Nabokov in 100%. Net, like, that was stability. They had Patrick Marlowe, obviously. They had stability and consistency for a long time. And even before that, the Sharks were a fun team to follow along because they were new in the early 90s. They had new colors. They had the Shark that was great design. Like, I remember, Beezer on his mask? He had the Shark. No, that was Brian Hayward. Mm-hmm. Brian Hayward had the shark teeth on his mask and the whole thing. Jamie Baker, the goal, right? Like, when they beat Detroit, like, it was...
In 7 and 94.
It was so easy to cheer for them.
And that was the same for Buffalo. That's the point.
It was the same for Buffalo, exactly.
3 years in, they're up against Montreal. The Knoxes and their love for the Montreal Canadiens, it couldn't have been scripted any better. You're facing, you know, this storied franchise. And it was, you know, that's where people latched on. And then, so as I went down this path in my mind, like, wow, like I do see a lot of similarities. And it's a strong reminder. And like,
yeah.
Buffalo came in with Vancouver. Neither team has won the cup despite a couple of trips to the finals. Couldn't do it, right? San Jose's been there. The teams that came after San Jose, Ottawa, Tampa. Ottawa's got to the front. They haven't scaled them out. Tampa, they have. Took a little while, but they did, right? But as I sat back and compared these two franchises, you have to, and it's hard. I get it. Nobody wants to win more than every, you know, your respective fan base,
yes,
especially here. But just think of the last 15 years in awarding the Stanley Cup. Chicago got it for the first time in 49 years. Boston got it for the first time in 39 years. LA got it for the first time in their 45-year history. Washington got it for the first time in their 44-year history. St. Louis got it for the first time in their 52-year history. And the Panthers, in their first one, got it for the first time in 31 years that could at best have been described as painfully mediocre prior to them winning.
Yeah.
So this all may mean nothing. It's just trying to put into perspective what so many teams go through. And it's not just one team battling to overcome the odds.
And it's every team hoping and wishing that draft and development is going to pay off at some point. And so if you're San Jose right now, you look at some of your history of having an expansion draft, and it was completely different back then. They weren't given good players like Vegas and Seattle to a certain extent were, I don't want to say gifted, but it was way different.
Before I look it up, can you, and I think I'm right here, but I'm going to try to double check. Do you know which Sabre went to the Sharks?
In 1993?
No, before that, 91.
91? Yeah, you're right, 91.
Oh, it wasn't in the expansion draft, though. But it was in their first year of existence. So I'll get an honorary.
A little mild deduction. Who was it?
Well, I was thinking of Dave Snuggerud. And okay, he actually was traded clearly at the deadline in 92, and Buffalo got an incredibly serviceable player for the next few years in Wayne Pressly, who became one of the, I mean, he was so good. Wayne already had a good career going at that point, but yeah. So
a lot
I just
of style
remember.
Points to Wayne Pressly with the hair, the hockey hair, curls coming out of the helmet and all of that. So people love that hair. But so who was picked in the expansion draft?
I didn't go that far. I only have didn't go that far. My brain.
But so I remember like Steve Jeff Shields going over there. Steve Shields went to San Jose. Mm-hmm. Many others went there. I still have friends in that area and some that were working for the Sharks in some capacity. Curtis Brown worked with their TV for a long time. He ended up moving to Nebraska. But yeah, but the Sharks, to me, you look at them and they found stability through some drafting and development. Yes, they had some trades that helped. But I remember going, like, Kentucky used to be the Sharks farm team.
The Kentucky Thoroughblades,
yes. And instead of Thoroughbreds, it was Thoroughblades. And Zdeno Chara was there. And I remember Evgeny Nabokov was John Nabokov.
Yeah, but he was not there. A Shark property at that point.
Chara?
Right.
No, Chara wasn't. But somehow he was, Ottawa may have, the Islanders had loaned him there, I think. So, but John Nabokov, Evgeny Nabokov was there. They had great players in their system that ended up playing big roles with the Sharks. But now they've started that again. And you look at their draft and their prospect and their young players and the work that Mike Greer did this year. I mean, yeah, they went from 47 points 2 years ago, and they obviously, you know, won the lottery, got Macklin Celebrini. They had 52 points last year.
So no change.
No change, really. They were last in the NHL. They had the best odds to get the number one overall pick, which ended up being Matthew Schaefer. The New York Islanders somehow, with a very small percentage, ended up winning the lottery, got number one. They got themselves a great player in Michael Mesa as well at number two overall. They've got, as we mentioned, Will Smith. They've got a ton of prospects that are really good. It just, how long will it take for the Sharks to develop that or use the cap space, as you mentioned, to surround it? They went out this year and added a ton of players. They added, but they're all kind of, you know, fill ins. It's like, you know, it's like if you have an award show and you have a lot of people that have to, the seat fillers. I feel like they added a bunch of seat fillers this season.
Wow. Are you sure you want that on tape?
Year. Put that on tape.
You're talking about three players on their blue line alone that have over 2,500 regular season games, over 300 playoff games, over 101 human years of existence on this planet, and they're dubbed seat fillers.
Well, I say seat fillers because they're not there for the long haul. Orlov got a two-year deal. Klingberg got a one-year deal. Letty was picked up on waivers.
Yeah.
You know,
they're the only team in the NHL to add three 30-something defensemen this offseason. And guess what? They were so bad defensively, they absolutely needed to help the blue line.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying like it was a necessity.
Seat fillers is not a nice way to say it.
I'd love to be a seat filler at the Oscars, get to sit next to all these celebrities. I'd say thank you for taking, but I feel like
it's the opposite. A seat filler watches. These players cannot come in and watch. They have to come in and do.
They have to come in and do. But it's like, you know, first swim of the summer. You know, you don't have a heater in your pool, so you're hoping that the solar like cover is heating up the water and you dip your toe in, right? I feel like that's what the Sharks did. They just dipped their toe in. They went in with one-year deal, 1 2-year deal. They made a trade. They acquired Ryan Reeves. Like, that's it's all for the short term. Maybe the plan is we don't care about the short term. We care about the long term. But I feel like they just did to fill in the gaps right now.
You know that like 20 other teams did the exact same thing, right? Because there was nobody available in free agency.
Yeah, because everybody signed their players because the cap went up and there was more money to go around.
Right.
Absolutely. Maybe that was the only way to add NHL players to their roster.
And what I love about it is even though they had a gazillion dollars to spend, Mike Greer didn't overpay on any of these guys. He didn't cave in. He didn't restructure his future, you know, internal salary cap among, you know, players on the roster. Orlov was brought in at a proper dollar figure. Letty was inherited with 1 year remaining at $4 million. And Klingberg's just trying to reestablish himself like he did with Edmonton at the end. And he's only at $4 million for 1 year. These are proper deals, in my opinion. So
it's market value. It wasn't like, let's go way off the market. But you mentioned Eklund, Celebrini, Toffoli. That's a first line that if I'm a San Jose Sharks fan, I'm buying tickets, and I want to go see Celebrini with Eklund and Toffoli, try to see if Toffoli can get 35, maybe close to 40 goals, if Celebrini can get to 70, 80, 85 points, which he had 63 last year. But then, your second line, you signed Jeff Skinner, you have a great prospect in Will Smith, and you went and signed Adam Gaudet, and that may be your second line. There's a step down from saying, I'm excited about Celebrini, Eklund, and Toffoli to, who's your second line? There's a big step.
I will agree with you on that. However, back to the point about the draft lottery, maybe the Sharks actually did win the lottery.
Yeah,
because they got the best forward. And you're talking about where they need, right? Maybe. It's all subjective. It's any person's opinion on any random day at any hour.
Talent because they need to score goals. Right. And they went from scoring 2.2 goals per game to 2.54 goals per game. They went up a little bit. Actually, they actually dropped a spot. They go from 31st to 32nd, but they scored a little bit more. But a lot is on the shoulders of Ryan Warsawski in year two as a coach. And can he get a little bit more of veteran players to settle things down? But defensively, they were bad. And yes, they traded Mackenzie Blackwood to Colorado, who was pretty good for them. Well, Georgiev was...
We need to save some bullets for the second half hour.
Yeah, so. Because we'll do goaltending right after, because uh-huh. Goaltending is going to be a big, big question mark. Uh-huh. And if they hit on goaltending, they'll be fine. But if they don't, it's back to the drawing board again.
Well, drawing board or storyboard? Because like the storyboard already, you know, you're mapping out what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
Right? Drawing board almost... So I'm more inclined to think they have a storyboard unfolding here based on their prospect pipeline. But you're thinking that all may not appear as well as it could be in the next couple of years?
I think Mike Greer is a smart guy, and I think that he has a plan. When I read about the San Jose Sharks, I read about we got a lot of prospects, and we got, you know, high-end draft capital that we've used, and I'm like, that's great. Mm-hmm. But what's the next step? How are you going to get to the next step of being competitive? And I'm not hearing that right now. So maybe the storyboard is, you know, at an impasse right now where they're like, okay, what's going to be next after that? And they haven't gone to it. I haven't heard really the plan. And GMs don't divulge their plan often, but mm-hmm. I want to hear a little bit more out of Mike Greer as to what is going to be next. I would like him to say, just as you said, in 2 years, we'll have $100 million in cap space. This is, and we have draft capital. This is where we're going to make our mark. Maybe I'd buy into that, but he hasn't said that.
I found a surprising stat about Macklin Celebrini. More on that coming up. We have Hockey Fest fast approaching. It's the all-ages street hockey tournament in conjunction with Sabres Fan Fest taking place September 13th. All skill levels are welcome for this event. So visit sabres.com/hockeyfest to sign up your team today. Of course, as of tomorrow, we're going to be just 2 weeks away from that incredible hockey weekend. We'll have the Prospects Challenge kicking off on the 11th. The Sabres play their first game against the Devils on the 12th. We've got Hockey Fest and Fan Fest on the 13th. All part of a terrific weekend, which again gets you real close to the NHL preseason beginning, of which the Sabres have 6 preseason games this year. It's the San Jose Sharks as our team of the day. A lot of former Sabres influencing the direction of that squad. Back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Crafted a new bumper sticker during the break. We are all seat fillers.
Yes, I think we should put it out there. And right now, you know what? Your talk of consistency for the Sharks for many, many years led me to think, okay, yes, they had the players. And then I just pulled up the list of head coaches that the Sharks have had.
Interesting list.
Yeah, but part of the consistency was that they had consistency in coaching as well from the mid-90s, you know, like when they hired
Kevin Constantine era?
Post-Constantine era.
Post-Constantine.
Yeah, so I'm saying like 97, Daryl Sutter gets hired. He coached over 400 games. After him was Ron Wilson. He was there for 5.5 years. And Todd McLellan was there for 7 years. And Pete DeBoer was there for almost 5 years.
Like, got him to the final.
Yes, but you go from Sutter, Wilson, McLellan, and DeBoer, there's your consistency. You have great coaching for the better part of 20 plus years. And that's also why the Sharks were so good, so consistent. So now it comes down to, again, they have a guy in Ryan Warsawski who in 82 games last year, they won 20. Mm-hmm. That's not a good stat line to have when you're 20, 50 and 12 as a head coach. That's, you gotta jump up next year.
Correct. But you would probably agree that, and not that he was trying to lose, but I don't imagine there were much higher expectations.
No, and the way they lost games, like
well,
they
that
would
was
be
the
up
problem.
And then keep like they would lose leads and lose late and they get blown out in the third period. And I remember when my dad, when I was in youth hockey, and they used to say bad teams usually lose in the third period. Good teams find a way to win in the third period, and the Sharks found ways to lose in the third period last year.
They also had some mind-numbing losing streaks. Like they would get it all figured out, they'd look good, and then all of a sudden they'd have like one win in 20 games and you're going, what happened? What is going on here with this team? However, and this leads me back to my surprising stat about Macklin Celebrini, it was a single game statistic.
Okay.
It was the Sharks game here in Buffalo on March 4th, which San Jose won 6-2. How many points did Celebrini have that night?
Is that the game they didn't play him late? He got banged up a little bit, but he already had...
He played 16 minutes, so yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I think there was...
No, you're right, but he still played 16 minutes.
He still played 16 minutes, but did he have 4 points?
Exactly why I asked the question. He had one.
One.
And he was the most dominant player. Honestly, it was one of the most, to me, dominating performances by a visiting player last year in Buffalo. He had one goal, no assists. And I'm like, what? He was so good that night. Remember us talking about just, you know, and we'd been seeing it a little bit, like just the playful interactions, you know, that he and Smith had been having with Toffoli and all that, and just what was growing. And again, it obviously wasn't leading to consistency and wins, but there wasn't a deflation in their young players either. Yeah, behind the scenes when they lose, sure, of course, they're going to be disappointed. But I thought it was a real, good glimpse into what they made, well, what they have for sure in Celebrini and what may happen next. But you're right. Like, I'm trying to kind of be optimistic.
Tate scored his 30th goal of the season that night. So, you know, I do remember that. But, yeah.
I'm tank half full here, obviously. Shark tank half full, like, with the team. Like, and I get it. I understand why people are negative and or skeptical as to how quickly they might turn this around. But...
This or
maybe.
That, who would you rather be, the San Jose Sharks or the Chicago Blackhawks?
That's a pretty good question. I mean, you know how I love the word great, so I'll bestow that on you. Marty, that was a great question.
That was a great. Darren Dreger, have a great weekend. yeah, but it's two different types of direction right now in the way that they're building their teams. And, you know, you got Connor Bedard, you got some young, but I feel like Chicago wants to be ahead right now, where San Jose is like, we're still going to just take our time and build it. But I have somehow I feel like I'd rather be San Jose just because of what you said early in the show. The fact that these contracts are going to fall right off in a year or two, and you've got this whiteboard, this storyboard that you can build whichever way you want.
I honestly don't even know how to answer the question. I think it's a really, really, really good one. Obviously,
Knight or Yaroslav Askarov, that could be the key to all of that. And they're both really high-end prospects, right? Spencer Knight got traded from Florida to Chicago, played well early, and wasn't great later in the season, but, you know, whatever. He's
Bedard, Celebrini, who's going to be better?
What were we just doing the other day? The top centers and whatnot, like Celebrini was on the list. Connor Bedard wasn't, right? So there's your
recency
difference.
Bias, obviously.
Recency bias. But I think that there's a lot of momentum going Celebrini's way. Maybe that's why, but yeah, it could very much be those two organizations trying to see which one gets, you know, into the playoffs first.
When we mentioned that they added three 30-something defensemen, which no other team in the NHL did. The Kings tried. They stopped it too. Orlov, Letty, and Klingberg.
Yes.
In my opinion, it has to help a bit. So what will it mean for this goaltending tandem of Nedeljkovic and Askarov? Man, 2 years ago, few could have predicted this tandem.
Wasn't going to be even on your radar. Askarov was a high prospect with the Nashville Predators, gets traded to San Jose because he basically said, I will not report to Milwaukee if I'm not making Nashville. But going to San Jose, he was okay with going to the Barracuda of the AHL because he felt like there was more of a door and opportunity to be with the big club at some point. And Georgiev was, you know, the guy in Colorado that was your number one goaltender. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's not playing well. And they make a trade. They bring in Blackwood. Georgiev goes to San Jose. So that was really, really weird last year. But then, Askarov is there. Nedeljkovic comes in. If Askarov can do what he did at the AHL level, and it doesn't have to have the streak and all of that, but I think he's a good goaltender. I just want him, and maybe that's just bad of me to say, I think he loves the spotlight and he plays too much into it. There's got to be a focus, a maturity level. I need to see that take a jump forward. Some people would say, let the kid be the kid. Let him have fun and be himself, and I get it. But I always think that when you get to the NHL, just like in NFL, when you get to the NFL, you're a top star quarterback. There has to be a maturity level. I think that's the same thing with Askarov in San Jose.
Who do you think plays more this year for them?
I think Askarov plays more. I think it will be like really close, like 45 to maybe 38, 37 or whatever makes 82, but it will be very close. But I think Askarov plays more.
It was such a wild ride in the Penguins' crease last year. And we saw Nedeljkovic have his greatest moment, of course, here in Buffalo, scoring the goal. But like, I'm almost surprised that he went 14, 15, and 5 with Pittsburgh. I would have expected it to be a little worse than that.
Like 18 and...
Yeah, 10, 18, and 2 or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, but he's played close to 200 games. We probably should know what he's all about. He's 5 years removed from being on the all-rookie team. I mean, he's not the oldest guy. He's 29.
Yeah.
Like...
Niagara Heisdog. It was Nedeljkovic played across the river at the in the OHL. He had a great year at Carolina. I don't really know why. Like, Carolina did not keep their goalie tandem. Like, he was good, and then they moved on from him. I think there's some good there, but if you're San Jose, you're looking at the future, and Askarov has to be your guy. Mm-hmm. So you're going to play him a little bit more.
Yeah, I still think, but I'm seeing split. I'm really seeing a full split here between these two, or someone else appears, but they have to hope that these two can be good enough to, you know, not force them into any other decisions, right?
They can't. Look, the foundation of the teams, and we talked Sabres a ton. We've talked Pittsburgh. We've talked all these teams. It all is about the crease. Mm-hmm. And if you want to say you're not going to waste Celebrini and Smith and Misa and all of those guys by having bad goaltending, Askarov has to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to start building that to make sure that in 2 years from now, he's one of the top 15 goalies in the National Hockey League. You have Celebrini in your four, Smith in your four, Eklund in your four, Misa probably in your two or three.
Dickinson who we didn't mention.
Two or three.
Like, Sam Dickinson is also super important here, because if their belief in this blue liner cements what they're trying to do short term with the free agents and waiver pickup, but also long term through the draft here, like if all of a sudden Dickinson and Misa like emerge from training camp this year and actually get games and stick, like like, what a story that would be.
Well, Chicago in the 2010s were built on those core guys. They drafted Kane, drafted Taze, drafted Seabrook, drafted Keith, drafted Corey Crawford. It was that. Now, they didn't draft Askarov. They acquired him, but it's a prospect that you acquire. It's almost like you developed him.
Exactly.
And then all the other guys, like, if they have that core, like, look out.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go a little longer in the last segment, hopefully with some great acknowledgement of some wonderful people. We want you to win a key to the arena, and to do that, to win this key, which would include Sabres and Bandits season ticket memberships for the 25-26 season and pairs of tickets to five upcoming KeyBank Center Live events. All you got to do, enter to win this one-of-a-kind prize at sabres.com/key. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Clearly, the show yesterday was too short because I didn't have time to acknowledge one of my favorite players in the NHL today. Happy belated to Brandon Hagel, who is well on his way, Marty, to being the number one answer to this question. The best NHL player ever drafted by Buffalo in the sixth round. The current honor is held by the late Peter McNabb, with Brian Campbell duly acknowledged as well. But the pace that Hagel is on is going to put him someday in incredible company, and what a run he has had since becoming a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Sabres history, and you think of the fact that Pierre Turgeon was the second number one choice this franchise ever had, and we all know the first one in Gilbert Perreault, the fact that Turgeon was basically able to match the career of Perreault is remarkable. And Turgeon turns 56 today.
So, Sneaky Pete, right? I mean, what a player. What a great person. Happy birthday, Pierre Turgeon. Short stick. He had a very short stick. Great hands. Stick and still plays a ton of games with alumni associations everywhere. We've had him at our golf tournament at a bunch of Buffalo Sabres event. He's always very, very friendly. Big smiles. Everybody loves him. But you're right. When you look at and compare the numbers between Gilbert Perreault and Pierre Turgeon, they're the same. They're the same as Sabre. Like, look at their career. 1,191 games for Gilbert, 1,294 for Pierre, over 500 goals. They're within three goals, within like 1 point in career. Both Hall of Fame members. Like, it's incredible.
And it's hard to win in the postseason, and Turgeon never got the cup, but boy, did he have a moment in 1999. Oh. This was an epic series against the then Phoenix Coyotes. Back and forth it went. The Blues were down 3-1 in the series, came roaring back, and in Game 7, there were no goals until late in the first overtime period, and Turgeon scores the OT winner in Game 7 to get them to move on. I was so happy for Pierre in this moment.
Yeah, a great goal by Pierre Turgeon, you know, just redirecting the shot. And a couple of things with that, like that logo at center ice in Phoenix was awesome. It was the moon, like the howling at the moon. But Pierre had that moment in 99. I think the New York Islanders had their moment in 93. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he got victimized of a cheap shot by Dale Hunter after the goal against the Washington Capitals. The Islanders ended up playing the Montreal Canadiens, who had defeated the Sabres in 93 in the second round. Like, but I think the Islanders, that was maybe their year to get back there. And Pierre was so fabulous in these playoffs in the season with the Islanders.
What a trade. LaFontaine was so good in Buffalo. Turgeon was so good with the Islanders. Yeah. It really was remarkable. And one funny thing happened in that St. Louis Phoenix series that you will love. Our good friend, Jamie McLennan, had an Adam Wilcox moment. He came in Game 3 of the series.
For St. Louis.
All seven shots that he faced. An empty net goal went in. Then his team scored. He got the loss in Game 3, not Grant Fuhr, even though he never gave up a goal.
Was Habib Bulin with the Arizona Coyotes, Phoenix Coyotes back then. So, Attaboy Noodles, you did your job.
A lot of history on this show. We'll try to duplicate it again tomorrow. We'll see you then.